everyone.
Good evening.
Let's have an AA meeting.
Let's have one.
My name is Lindsay, and I'm an alcoholic.
Welcome to
the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language, from their own point of view, the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker and believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Now I'm going to introduce our speaker for tonight. I met this lovely lady at a Unity weekend. And when I first met her, I just thought to myself, man, I want to be like her one day.
Yeah.
Because she has so many things that I would love to have many years from now as well as now. But I can't wait to hear what Isla has to share with us, so y'all give her a round of applause.
One more second of silent meditation. Dear God, great mystery, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in your sight. Thank you. Amen.
Amen.
My name is Isla Running Deer. I am an alcoholic. I am so grateful to be sober today. And I am so grateful that you are too. Is there anybody here who has had a drink today? Would you tell us if you had? Before, as I want to thank you for being here, and I especially want to thank, I just can't believe, sometimes I'm just overwhelmed at your thoughtfulness and your kindness to bring Nosy Rosie. And I am so honored that she calls me sponsor.
She sure does. Come hear her sponsor talk.
Oh, when I heard Amy share up here not long ago at the same meeting, she was talking about her attention deficit disorder. And you all know that I have it because I'll be sometimes halfway home from a meeting and I realized that I talked 5 minutes and never did get to the point. And the first time I was diagnosed with it was when I met my grandchildren for the first time, and that was Valentine's Day in 1997. And I had four little granddaughters, and the oldest, Taylor, was about 7 at that time. And I was telling stories, of course, long, grown-out stories, and describing what I would, all of that. But Taylor's little sweet hand went to my face, and she said, "Grandmother Isla, you've interrupted yourself." So I'm going to try, and I'm going to have to go fast because, you know, if I just hit the bullet points, I could be here until 10 easily. So I'm going to try and talk as much as, and in case I forget, the primary reason that I am here tonight is to share my experience, strength, and hope with Alcoholics Anonymous. And If you don't hear anything else, I am here to testify that Alcoholics Anonymous and the people in it, God works through people. There's a sign over there. I got that really well. The people in it saved my life. And my sobriety date is October 24 of 89. When my life changed, and the most important date in my life was at my very first AA meeting, which was April 3rd, 1975. And it was in this building. And I stayed sober 2 weeks shy of 14 years when I drank again in 89. And I stayed out for, it must have been about from mid-March until October 10th of 89. And I haven't had a drink since then. So it is the date that I celebrate and get a chip. It's wonderful. But the primary thing that I learned, if anything, from that, in case I don't get caught up with, is that what I have is one day. One day. And one of the best tools that I learned in AA was the concept of just for today, 24 hours a day. So April 3rd, 1975, and I'm going to try and get as much AA that I can remember. I don't know why I have this pen. It's a little late for notes. that night, I shall never, ever forget. I was 31 years old. I had my first drink at 18. And I was pretty banged up and beaten up. And I had started trying to quit drinking probably 4 years before that. And the very first time I called AA, I was trying to quit drinking, but I could not stop drinking. But I had also reached the point where I couldn't get drunk. I could not. I think in retrospect, I know I was trying to relieve myself of the bondage of self. And while I called myself an agnostic, I started to pray. And it was just real simple. We were not church-going people. I had no religion. I called myself agnostic. I believe that's what I was, but I was praying just as simple. Dear God, please help me stop drinking. And I would pray that drunk and sober for about 3 months. And I was laying on my couch one day and I was kind of trying to detox myself. And the phone rang, and I about jumped out of my skin because my phone didn't ring very much because people who drank like me didn't want anything to do with me. I was bad news. And it was an old roommate who had, her name's Pam Mellish, and, you know, you can't live with somebody and fool. You can't fool them, so Pam had gone to Al-Anon to try and help her mother, but had not succeeded. So she said, I know who could use this information. So Pam calls me. God works through people. And Pam told me about the concept of alcoholism being a disease. And that made it a lot more palatable to me. And she said, and if you're afraid to go to a meeting, I'll go with you. And I said, no, thank you. And I did. The next meeting that was on the schedule was the women's 8 o'clock meeting in the, right behind that brick wall. And I came with another old roommate, but this particular roommate drank pretty much the same way I did. And on the way over here that day, that April 3rd day, on the way over here, we had only had like one beer each. And she said, well, we've got to go restock. And I said, no, 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 wait a minute. Remember, we're going to go to that meeting. Oh, yeah. So we came in, and we came in a little bit late. So they didn't know at the very beginning that we were newcomers. And as I said, it was all women. And I didn't know their stories. I didn't know their biographies. But I knew that they were just like me, except they didn't drink. And oh God, I wanted what they had. And I don't know what they said, except I know they were talking about a big book. And I thought they were talking about the Bible. And I thought, oh, shit. And yet, what I got that very, very first AA meeting, I got hope. I got hope. And after the meeting, We were talking, and when they learned that it was our very first meeting, I left here that night with, that same night, I had a big book, I had a 12 and 12, and I had this. And this is the original. You can tell it's just held together with spit and scotch tape. And use. And this was kind of my best tool for a long, long time. Because, so when we left here, I had hope and I had tools. And that made.
Tell them what that was.
Oh, this, I didn't say it. This is 24 hours a day book. And from this, and that 24 hour a day concept, and I carried this, I was a flight attendant. And I used to, I'll get there in a minute, but I carried this in my smock pocket instead of the vodka miniatures. And I didn't want to drink, guys. I didn't want to drink. I had to. I'll never forget the first time, and I'm digressing, I'm floating around here, but I was at first, drinking and being a flight attendant, and I was a blackout drinker from the get-go. But it was kind of fun because it was kind of more accepted. And I can remember as a whole crew, after being partying the night before, mixing up in a water pitcher, you know, a big bunch of Bloody Marys, and all of the flight, the cabin crew, not, I hope the pilots were drinking, but we know, all know Lyle, right? But I remember it was about 10 o'clock one day, and I don't know when this was as far as chronologically, but I knew that I was working in the first class section, and I had already served, it was about 10 o'clock in the morning. And, of course, I had shown up on time, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it was like the second leg of the trip. And people had finished breakfast, and they had finished their first cup of coffee. And, you know, as a flight attendant, Benny Bailey, who's in service, I knew they wanted that second cup of coffee, or they wanted me to pick up their tray. And I was going to offer second cups of coffee, and I knew that I could not pour a cup of coffee. My hands, kind of suddenly, were trembling so badly. And I thought, oh God, what am I going to do? So I did. I put two, and we all know you can smell vodka, but it's not as strong as others. I put two miniatures. Of course, I had my cigarettes and my lighter, and I go in the lavatory, and I managed to hit my mouth and smoke a cigarette, and then I was able to come out and fill the cups, and that came kind of a way of life. And it was horrific. And sometimes I would try to drink, like, in the hotel room to, like, get enough vodka in me so I wouldn't have to drink on the flight. But usually, no. And it didn't always stay down, as you know. So, what was considered in those days a real luxury was having a plane change. Because if you had a plane change, I could go in a public lavatory in a terminal and have all that glorious privacy to drink. It was horrific. It was horrific. And I don't have to tell you. That night, when I got hope and I left here, Joan, that was my roommate's name, we attended that meeting. We went to a bar in Buckhead. And she ordered her usual scotch and soda. And I ordered whatever the designer drink of the day was. And I announced to the bartender, I just came from my first AA meeting and I'm not going to drink anymore. And I know you're laughing, and I know that bartender didn't care, but there is a lot of power in the spoken word, and there is a lot of power in stating. I stated, anybody who would listen, you know, anybody who would listen, and I can, and everybody knew I was a drunk, so why would I care? And I remember shortly after that, not long at all, I was deadheading in the first class in uniform, and the flight attendant knew me, and she came over and she whispered, I know you want a Bloody Mary in a coffee cup. And I had the big book, and I had a fake cover on it, right? And I pulled her over close to me, and I showed her what I was reading. And her reaction was, she said, oh, Iva, I'm so happy for you. And that's the kind of reception that I have had every time I have broken my anonymity. People aren't stupid. And if Betty Ford can break her anonymity, think of the lives that might be lost had she not. Anyway, I respect yours, and if I break it, I apologize immediately, don't I, Julie? Yes. I did it inadvertently once. But, so, in the beginning, we're going to sing the song from the beginning. I'm going to do it nice and easy. I was the seventh child born to Lloyd and Stella, and this was in northeast corner of Alabama, Sand Mountain. You know. And, it's kind of an infamous place. And my daddy was an alcoholic, and it was very, very, very serious, severe poverty. And some of you new kids might not know what a sharecropper is, but that's all I need to say about that. It was pretty, pretty rough. And my daddy was an alcoholic, and so were most of my siblings. Well, today, I'm the sole survivor, and alcoholism and alcohol and drugs was responsible for a lot of those deaths, if not directly, indirectly. So I know I'm God's favorite kid. I know I am. And right out of a high school, as a kid, the kids can be really mean, but in junior and high school, they were very, very kind to me. And as a kid, you know, a lot of bullying and teasing, and I was pitifully, pitifully shy and undernourished and all that goes with poverty. And in high school, the people, and I just had a 60 class of 61 class reunion that I attended a few months ago. And I saw some of those, there were 15 of us total. Tim drove me. Thank you, Tim. God love him. And me fussing all the time. Hold it between the lines. My little car beeps when you get out of line. Tim! Very patient with me. But those people, they were so kind to me because I was, you know, showing up in hand-me-down clothes that didn't fit. And there wasn't enough money for an instrument to be in the band, so they made me a flag carrier and put me in this adorable little uniform, and they made me feel a part of. And then the real Sally Fields moment came when they voted me their senior class beauty. And I went in the bathroom and I cried. But I went in the bathroom because I had never, until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, talked about my real feelings. It was not talked about. And my real feelings were shame, a lot of self-pity. I came in dripping with self-pity. Just the not good enough. And then when I graduated high school at age 17, I didn't know it, but I was pregnant. There had been a guy, and it only takes one time, you know. But, he abandoned me, and I slunk off to Chicago and had my son and relinquished him for adoption. And I was I turned 18 on the 27th of December, and he was born January 5th. So I had just enough. I was just old enough to sign the adoption papers. And that has nothing to do with alcoholism, because I hadn't even had a drink at all this, because I knew that if I picked up a drink, the reason I held off till I was 18 was because I knew that I didn't want to be like my siblings and all that, and I knew I would be. Somehow I intuitively knew that, and that's the way it happened. But by the time I got to Chattanooga, not long after my son was born, I was... got a job, of course, and it was with a drinking crowd, and so I was 18 when I started drinking. By the time I was 20, I went to work with Eastern Airlines. That's another important British airline. But it was what a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful opportunity that was to see the world and get educated. World educated. And I had learned to read. Before AA, my saving gift was learning to read, because that opened up a whole other world for me. And I lived in books, and I still kind of do. And it's a wonderful place to live. But, and on every gratitude list, then and now, thank you, God, I can read. So, at 20, was based in D.C., and, there's so much to tell, and I barely made a dent. It was my soon-to-be, my one and only mother-in-law was the first one to tell me to my face, and I was 24. She said she had a long list of reasons she did not want me to marry her son. And on the number one that was on the list was, "And you have a drinking problem." And I guess I knew that, but I had, I think that the trauma of relinquishing a child, it's such an unnatural act. I think the trauma of that, I think it was just that I don't care. I'm a bad, bad girl, and I'm damaged goods, and all the secrecy and all of that that goes with A, everybody knew the family was alcoholic, right? It was, I pretended the mask that I wore would tell you, or I tried to say to you, "I don't care anyway. I'm tough. I'm strong. I don't care anyway." I cared so desperately to be accepted, to be loved. But I stuffed it all down until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the love, the affection, the acceptance that I was given, and it's like God just handpicked the people for me to hang out with. And when I got to AA, I didn't want to share because I wasn't used to that. Now, I could talk, you know, I could talk shit with you before or after a meeting, but between the Lord's Prayer, Senator Indy Prayer, and the Lord's Prayer, that was like sacred time. And you were talking about your innermost feelings and your fears and yourselves, and I had never done that. Not sober. So it was really, really hard for me, but I would make myself, and you guys would say, you know, "Come on, Misty, come on, Isla, come on, you can do this. And I would chair meetings, and I would be teary the whole meeting, and y'all didn't care, you just, you know, paid no attention, just loved me anyway. And that's what we do in these rooms. We love you till you can love yourself. And the only thing that I had to do was I'd be honest, open-minded, and willing. And I had an abundance of willingness. There is not time to tell you about the DUIs, about the, I mean, that last jail stamp was very, very, very rough. And that first year, it was hard. The ups and downs were like an emotional roller coaster. But I didn't drink, and I didn't drink, and I didn't drink until 14 years had passed. And the people of Alcoholics Anonymous, when I had a year sober, I brought a realtor here, and I said, "I want a house within a 6-mile radius." Well, it was over 2612 Dogwood Terrace. The house is no longer there. But that was party, AA party central for at least a decade. And I have a list here of the people. A lot of them are dead. That were over there flipping burgers and dancing and having fun. And it was, you're the first time I knew anything about true friendship, true fellowship, true sisterhood and brotherhood. And what happened in 89 was I just got disconnected. No longer was staying sober my primary purpose. And I had picked up, a new hobby, and it was Wing Chun Kung Fu, which is sort of philosophy in itself. Any martial artists? But it was, what happened was, you know, my typical, anything worth doing is worth doing to excess. Now, I'm trying to learn about, you know, keep reasonable and hang on form. But I started hanging out with a martial artist more than my AA pals. And, yeah. And it just kind of, I was at, a lot of stuff was going on, but there's all, life always goes on. There was a lot of stuff going on. But I was at my niece's house in Alabama, and I felt very safe and comfortable. And I walked in, and she said, I was just about to have a drink. And I said, oh, good, pour me one, too. And she said, well, aren't you supposed to call your sponsor or something? So I said it right there, and it was bourbon. I hated bourbon anyway. But I called her, and I talked for about an hour, and then I had the drink. And here's what it happens, though. I controlled it for about 2 weeks. I didn't have another drink for about 2 weeks. But that's all I thought about. That's all I thought about. So I had, thank God, I did not. I had just enough sense not to get behind a wheel, and so relatively unscathed, I made my way back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And actually, that very first night, even though I had made a commitment not to drink, I didn't pick up a white chip that night. So I picked up my first white chip October 24th of 89. And, of course, I was just welcomed right back. And this place, is Stan Park's plaque still there? Well, the people, I've just got to name a few names. And if you're new, and I know that a lot of you are, get yourself some close friends, two or three, and we talked, and we were together all the time, and don't argue, that's big stuff in step two, and work the steps, and what I was going to say about this was kind of like my, I did like 1, 2, 3, 10, 11, 12 for about 18 months, even though I had made some amends. And it says in the big book, we may start making amends as soon as we think we can stay sober. And I thought I could stay sober after about 6 months. So how I went to school for Eastern Airlines Training School after I was hired. Oh, and by the way, on my way to my second interview, the first one was in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And on the way to my second interview was my very first flight, and I was on a pass. But that's neither here nor there. I don't know where. Oh, the money. It cost $300 to go to the training school. Well, that was like 10 grand today. And it had been my ex-boss there in Chattanooga who had lent me the money. I had never repaid him. And that bothered me. And I had always said, and there were two amends that I made really fast. And they both included checks. And a letter, and I sent him the check and the letter, and he and the office manager, who loved me and helped me also, kept me from getting fired. they called me on the phone, and they were crying. And they knew when I was working there at age 19 that I was alcoholic. and they were crying with joy because I had found AA. And I had found a new way of living. And the reason I'm doing this, and I guess you can all kind of tell, but the reason I'm doing this, because it says on page 181 of the big book that we're mining gold. That's not where it says. That's in Bill Sees It. That's page 57. And what I love is that I am still learning. After all these years, I get excited about you. And when I see the steps and I see the world through your young, new eyes, it makes me feel young again. But here's the thing. We're mining for gold. And it's a lifetime deal. And, you know, the trick is, yeah, we get all the gold, but we have to give it all away. To try and repay those men and women who helped me so much. That's one reason, a sense of duty. And it says in the book that it's a pleasure, but, you know, I really would rather be beaten with a big stick. So, God's truth. But I am determined. Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. And it made it not just, I mean, happy, joyous, and free is kind of how I always know if I'm doing God's will. Well, if I'm sitting over here crying and feeling sorry for myself, that ain't God's will. If I'm not taking myself too seriously, and if I'm laughing, I'm not exercising any of my character defects. And the ones that I have been willing to let go in step 6 and 7, they have been removed. And my job is to act as if it's been done. And every day, and I want to read you this, Alcoholics Anonymous works, if you work it. And the keys to the kingdom, for in exchange for a hangover and a bottle, we can change it and be given the keys to the kingdom. And it says somewhere in the literature that, you know, we've been talking to you about grave, serious things. Like when I had about 3 years, the telephone down in the kitchen was my, in case of emergency, phone number to call the people they had. And when I had about 3 years sobriety, for the debriefing and I'm turning in the money, et cetera. Oh, that's another thing. I used to steal not only the liquor, but the movie money too. And after, at my very, very first AA meeting, when I had hope, my behavior changed. When I went to work the next time, I did not steal anything. And I paid back. I was generally in charge of the money, the bookkeeping. I put that money back. I didn't tell anybody. It ain't about them. All it would have done is get me fired. But I put the money back. And somebody asked me one day, how much did you put back? It might have been you, Brett. I said, I put it back until I felt okay with it. And I believe with all my heart that every one of these steps are designed to enable. AA is a set of principles, spiritual in their nature, which if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. We've got a lot of birthdays tonight, and I'm going to close with this while thanking you so much for your attendance and your attention. I appreciate it greatly. And somewhere in here, right here it is, it reads, because what I try to do is stay in the now, in this present little instant. Eckhart Tolle is very, very influential in helping me with that. But it reads here, and this is a Sanskrit proverb, and it's in the beginning of this little book, which I carried in my pocket, and I start to get frustrated on the airplane at this. And it reads, look to this day, for it is life, the very life of life. In its brief course lies all the verities and realities of existence, the bliss of growth, the splendor of action, the glory of power. For yesterday is but a dream, and tomorrow is only a vision, but today, well lived, makes every yesterday a dream of happiness and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. I'm crying. And it's not a happy cry, but it says say something positive. I can't even.
I can see clearly.